Well, let's go ahead and get started. We'll spend a bit of time talking about giving an answer for our hope, but we want to begin by thanking you for being here. If you're visiting with us, we're just thrilled that you're here, and we have visitors. Mike is here, and it is such a great thing to see him. We've been praying for him for a long time, and it's nice to see that he's able to be up and around and doing more of what he wants to do. Others are visiting with us. We're thrilled that you're here. We hope that you can come back and be with us anytime that you have the opportunity. So let's talk for just a minute as we continue our theme of hope about giving an answer for the hope that is in us. That's a statement that the Apostle Peter made in 1 Peter 3. At verse 15, he said, "Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Do this with gentleness and respect." We need to be able to give a reason for what we do. People are going to make observations about us, and hopefully they'll ask a question about why we do what we do. And it's a thought process that tells us we want to be ready to give an answer to everybody that asks. Now, we're not talking about giving an answer. I'm not talking here about me giving an answer to Mandy. She may ask me about something that I've done, but she already knows what motivates my life. And so we're not talking about giving an answer to people that may be friendly to your understanding of a relationship with God. Really, we're talking to people that, well, they basically probably fall into two groups. It could be that they're honestly impressed by the way that they see you living, and they really want to know what it is that causes you to live this way. So they're honestly trying to understand what you do. And it may be that they don't want to know and they're just asking to try to embarrass you. It may be that they're asking because they're trying to trap you into saying something that they can use against you. It may be that they may want to make fun of you. But both of those people deserve to have an answer. And our answer really is going to be the same for everyone that asks. And we're needing to give a reason for our hope-inspired behavior. It's our behavior that prompts the question. And simply describing what our behavior is doesn't really answer the question, does it? That's not the reason why we behave the way that we do. That's explaining what we do. We need to have an attitude that says we're going to give a reason for our hope. And Kim keeps telling me one of the things that I need to learn is that when somebody asks me what time it is, I'm not supposed to tell them how to build a watch. So I need to develop a succinct statement, a succinct answer to explain why I do the things that we do. Now we have Bring a Friend Sunday coming up. We don't, we have, the elders haven't determined exactly what the best date for that will be, but they're working on that. And so we need to have a well thought out response to this question, why do you do the things that you do? And it needs to be an answer that we give with gentleness and respect. We don't need to berate people, but we need to gently explain to them why we do the things that we do. So let me just stop here and tell you, I'm going to give you what my reason is for the things that I do. This is what my answer would be. And after we're done, I'm going to ask you to write down what your answer would be. Not while we're standing around visiting with each other, but take some time to write down what your answer would be. Practice giving that answer again and again. We're going to put together some visitor packets, and we'll, if you're amenable to it, maybe we'll use your answer to put into a visitor's packet to explain why you do what you do. People are going to have questions. So, Dean, why do you do what you do? Well, let me tell you about my life. Just very quickly, I was born in Louisville. I'm just teasing. Because my life wasn't falling apart at every turn. My life before I came to acknowledge God was a pretty good life. I thought I was doing pretty well. Was working for a law firm. I felt like I was pretty much accepted, a valued member of that firm. And the closer I got to those attorneys, the more I got to see the way that they lived their lives. And I came to the conclusion, ultimately, that they would lie if they needed to. They'd throw their mother under the bus if that's what it took to win a case. They were jealous of each other. They smiled when they greeted each other, but they were not what I call good people. And I don't think most people want to be that. You know, like I said this morning in Bible class, I don't know anybody who on their deathbed would like for somebody to say about them, he was the best cheat there was. The closer I got to those folks, the less I wanted to be that way. And it all kind of came to a head when one of the partners who was helping me challenge the bar exam. You can do that in California. You don't have to go to law school. You can just take the bar exam. If you pass it, then you can still be an attorney without having to go to law school. Well, one of the partners that was helping me challenge the bar exam called me up, and he needed a ride. It meant that I had to drive from Orange County to Century City because it was that was where he was. He needed a ride. The reason he needed a ride was he was just drunk as a skunk. And even he knew that he wasn't in shape to drive his car. So he called me. And I felt pretty good about that. You know, he respected me enough that he would call me and ask me to come and give him a ride just as a friend. So I did. On the way back home, he barked all over my car. I had a new car. It was a pretty nice car for me. It was a Celica GT, 1972 Celica GT. He barked all over my car. I got him home. He got out of the car. Never once said, Oh, let me help you clean this up. Didn't say, you take it to a detail shop and I'll pay for it. He didn't even say, I'm sorry. He got out of my car. The next day, he called me to his office. And I thought, well, he's probably going to apologize. Because he was being a real jerk. I went to his office and he said, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to help you anymore. Right then, I decided I didn't want to be like that. I've heard about Jesus. I grew up, parents were Christians, and I knew about Jesus. I knew what kind of friend Jesus was. He was willing to die to show me how much he loved me. So I decided that I wanted to be one of his people, not one of those people. Put him on in baptism. I try to live a life that he wants me to live. And I've been so blessed. I have wonderful kids, beautiful marriage, live in a nice house, drive a clean car. Jesus keeps his promises. Unlike the people that I used to value, Jesus keeps his promises. That's why I'm one of his. So that's my answer. I want you to take the time to put together your answer. So think about a couple of things. I'm going to give you a handout in a minute, and there are three things that you need to think about. These are the kinds of things that the apostles talked to early Christians about. Okay? First thing you need to think about is what your life was like before you were a Christian. Second thing, think about what you did to show your allegiance to Jesus. Third thing, think about what that means to you now. Write down your answer. I'm confident, because I know the folks in this group, I'm confident that you'll come up with some really impressive answers that we want other people to know about.